Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome one and all to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. Another month is upon us. Another episode is here. And I am thankful you are all here listening and thankful for those that are listening on demand in the future. If you see where I'm going with this, the thank you. Just had Thanksgiving. Very thankful and grateful for all of you being here and spending some time here on the FSH Society Show. We've got a great guest planned for this show, and her name is Amanda Rickard. She's a scientist from, let's see here, the Genia, I believe is how you pronounce it, BioCell. So we're going to talk with her. She's a senior scientist there, and she's got great news for us in the way of the science of FSHD. So we want to talk to her. Excited to have her on. Last month, if you missed last month's episode, phenomenal fun episode. We had Skylar Conover on. Miss Wheelchair USA 2015, had a phenomenal story to share with us there as well. So that was fun to have her on. And yeah, so you can go back to the shows on the archive on Blog Talk Radio. They're all there for you. It's all linked through fshsociety.org. And that's the best way to kind of get in touch with all those episodes. You can follow the show through Blog Talk Radio so you don't miss an episode. I actually searched the show on some of the podcasts search apps out there, and we are out there. So you can, if you have a podcast engine that you use to find podcasts, FSH Society Radio is amongst them. You can follow us on Twitter at FSH Society. You can also follow on Facebook, FSH Society. Just search it on there. You can email me directly. That's fshradiohost@gmail.com. Happy to take your comments and questions, and if it's tonight about this guest or past guests or about myself, or maybe you just want someone to talk to a little bit, I'm here for you and love to chat with you. I've done that in the past with other guests, actually, or other listeners that actually turned out to be guests, like when we had Tyler on Quig. She actually, we had a conversation almost a year prior about her FSH story, and then we finally got it connected in a time that could work for her to be on the show, and she shared her story, and that was like two episodes back. So love to hear from you. Love to hear your FSH Society story or FSH story as well, and that's really what this is about. It's about community. It's about support. It's not just about me sitting in my little studio having these awesome guests on. And so it's mostly about you, the listener. We're trying to give you some great information, trying to get you some good support out there to deal with what you're dealing with, or just to know that you're not alone. It's just quite simply that sometimes. You just need to hear another voice. I mean, I have FSHD1. A lot of our guests have it that have been on, or other people that are helping and are in the fight. Next month, I'm happy to say that I've got a good show lined up also in December. It's actually the day after Christmas. So you're not going to hurt my feelings if you don't make that one. I get it if you don't listen to the live show. We're going to do a big year in review. Probably put up some good interview clips from past guests from this previous year. We'll have June Kinoshita on. We got some notes from Beth Johnson, what's coming up in 2019. She's going to supply that for us to go over. So, and I really kind of want that show in December, December 26th. If you're able to get yourself in on the show, share your story right there live with us. I'd love it. If you want to have me share your comments about the show or about FSH or anything for that matter on that episode, send me those emails, fshradiohost@gmail.com. Still opening up too for the StoryCorps project. I have a couple stories only in there. We need to fill that up a little more before we can make it anything substantial. We really want to have a good host of those stories out there. We got a couple right now in the works. So the email for that is fshradiohost@gmail.com. You can also text me, call me on my own personal line. So here you go. Write this down. 414-659-3392. It's out there. That's how open I am with this. Contact me that way if you'd like as well. If you want to call into the show line, into the studio line tonight, that's the best way to talk to me tonight, right now within this hour. And that's 949-270-5953. After the show, you can dial the 414 number I previously gave, or text me. We can contact that way. So I don't know if you guys saw, too, the FSHD Advocate, brand new newsletter out there. I got it. And it's awesome. Nice look to it. I actually got some attention when I was reading it, waiting for my oldest son, who's in some baseball classes, like catcher's classes and stuff, and the parents kind of sit in the spot. And I was reading it, and they're like, hey, what's that? So I got to kind of spread the word about this a little bit, because the question was, what's the advocate in the FSH society? Is that some secret group? Yeah, sometimes I guess I get that comment. And no, it's not, and I explained it to him. And when I was paging it through, I found that there's almost a theme of kind of what we're talking about here tonight. And we're talking about the science of this and getting into the genetics of it all. I'm not the scientist. I don't know all these things. That's why we bring in great guests like Amanda Rickard on tonight to help explain it. But within this advocate, there's a lot of talk about this. There's a lot of write-ups about the science of it all. Right away on page 4, FSH Society latest grant awards, regenerative therapy, DUX4 trap, and why females are on an edge. That's an awesome article. There's on the next page, right? Page 6, the use of antioxidants in FSHD. So there's two articles right there. DUX4 versus PAC7 on page 8, all full of the science about it. And spoken in a language that even I was starting to understand it, believe it or not. And it is riddled with those great stories and great articles. So I hope that if you haven't gotten The Advocate yet, you get on the mailing list and you get this. I think it's also available at fshsociety.org if you just want to download it for your reading pleasure there as well. This last week was Thanksgiving, right? Hopefully a lot of us got a chance to visit with friends and family, and spend some time gathering and being thankful for what we have. Hopefully those out there listening don't feel like they're alone in this battle. You're not. I'm right here over your little airwaves here. And I was thankful for that. When I had time to reflect a little bit, it kind of led me to what was I going to talk about when I started this show. And I felt like I had to talk about this. I felt like I had to talk about being thankful, just that simpleness of it, giving thanks. I had a conversation a couple weeks back with a woman that had interest in being on the show, and we're still working that out, so stay tuned. But in part of what she was telling me was almost be blessed to have it, to have FSHD. And I was almost taken back, almost angry. I was like, what do you mean be blessed? But I had some time to reflect on that. I had time to reflect on what she said over the Thanksgiving weekend, and kind of a time where being thankful, I think you kind of hit pause, and that's really the reason to go, wait a minute, what do we have? What are we thankful for? And even in our struggles, what are we thankful for? And I realized that, yeah, you know, I don't want to come off sounding weird, but I'm almost in a way thankful for the knowledge of this disease, because of what it's helped me become. I firmly believe I've become a better person in helping fight and helping communicate and helping connect with people with this. I think it's made me a better person. That's kind of why I feel that way. That I've tried to make the best of it, but honestly, being thankful because at least I can make an impact. So for me, it's selfish. Like, this sucks. This struggle sucks. But I get to do this. I get to do this platform, this podcasting, something I love, and I can connect with people and listen to awesome guests and hear things I never would have had the chance to hear or talk to people I would have never had the chance to talk to or meet. And then there's the impact of we, being thankful for beyond me, beyond my circle, where it stretches to my friends and my family who've actually, I think they've drawn closer to me because of it. And then to have a purpose. I was thankful to have this purpose to do this. So I hope all of you out there listening can reach and find what you're thankful for with all of it. Yeah. So happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a good one. I really do. And I hope you're all blessed wherever you are. Yeah. So there's no really great segue for that, is there? No, it kind of got awkward. No, we have, I think that is the bottom line, to really be thankful. It's not easy. And I just firmly believe that everybody has a something. Everybody does. And this just happens to be mine or ours. And we're all in it together. So what we're going to do is take a break. And when we come back, we're going to bring in our featured guest, Amanda Rickard. If you want to get in touch with the show, you want to get in touch here, you want to comment about the show, you want to send an email, or you want to chat, there's a chat room on Blog Talk Radio. Send me your questions. My email address is fshradiohost@gmail.com. If you want to call into the studio, you can do that, 949-270-5953. After the show, you want to message me. You want to talk. My direct number is 414-659-3392. All the tools at your disposal to communicate. Let's connect. Speaking of connecting, and let's take a break, right? Let's just connect with an ad, and let's come back after the break, and we'll bring in our featured guest, Amanda Rickard. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active. Connect with local members. Volunteer for research and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org. Hey, welcome back to the show. FSH Society Radio Show is what you're tuned into. If it's live right now or on demand, thanks for being here. That's right, you missed the live show. That's okay, because now you probably found it on demand, which is why you're listening to me now. And that's all through Blog Talk Radio. You can find all those things at fshsociety.org. You want to chat in with us tonight live here with our guests, you can do that. There's a chat room through Blog Talk Radio. You can use that. You can send me an email, fshradiohost@gmail.com. You can dive in maybe after the featured guest with any comments you want to call in with. That's 949-270-5953. I'll even let you text questions if you'd like. Why don't we try that? You can do that too. My text number, you can do 414-659-3392. I got enough battery. I can receive your text. No problem. The show is about all of you. If you have questions for our great featured guests we're about to bring on in, yeah, she's Amanda Rickard. She is a scientist and also on the advisory board of directors for the FSH, of FSH Research, FSHfriends.org. Oh, my goodness, it's a mouthful. Amanda, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I'm doing good. You are a busy person, Amanda.
I am a busy person.
Yeah.
That's certainly
I can just tell by all the stuff that I have to read off, and my tongue got tired. It's holy cow.
It's hard enough to say facio-scapulohumeral.
Yeah. I usually bypass that. But I just point. It affects this. It affects that. You know.
That makes sense.
So thanks for being here, taking the time to join us and talk about yourself, talk about the great work that you're doing. And why don't we go a little selfish? Let's talk about you. Where are you from, and what are you doing, and where are you calling from right now?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thank you for inviting me to be part of the program. This is really exciting, and I'm glad to talk to people about the work that we're doing and to answer questions. So I'm happy to be here. I am originally from Washington State. I grew up in a small town just south of Olympia, which is the capital. And then moved up north on the north side of the state for college, and then settled in Seattle for about 6 years, and then eventually moved down to San Diego to work with Genea Biocells, where I'm currently working on the FSHD therapeutics. And so I'm calling now from San Diego.
Nice. And what's the weather like there in San Diego?
It's always the same. It's about 70 degrees,
oh.
So it's weird. For me to
stop,
because I'm used to this time of year being very dark and cold.
Are you? Yes, I'm in Wisconsin, so
okay.
It's dark and cold here. It's dark and
That's
cold here. There's already snow
you
on the ground.
To San Diego.
Yeah, I should. Oh my goodness, that'd be awesome. I'm leaving right now.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. So, how did when you were a younger version of yourself? How did you get into this interest? You know, were you like the smartest kid in class and, you know, this was a calling right away? Did you just love biology? Did you, you know, what was some of the trigger points to have you follow this path?
Yeah, so I was really lucky because the high school that I went to had a really early molecular genetics program. And so I enrolled in that my sophomore year and went through 3 years of molecular genetics, where I got to learn all about the type of stuff that I'm studying now, but just sort of at a very beginner stage, and got to do a senior project there. And so that sort of sparked an interest in biotech and an interest in genetics, and taught me a lot of sort of baseline biology information that I needed when I went to undergrad. And so then when I went to college, I contacted a bunch of the professors at my school and said, hey, I had this really cool high school experience and I'm interested in continuing to do research. And so one of the professors wrote back and expressed an interest in having me join her lab. And so I got to work in a lab that studies fruit flies while I was an undergrad, and we studied the Hutchinson-Gilford progeria, which is an early aging disease, but is kind of somewhat similar to FSHD, and that the studied about it was called epigenetics, and so that means mechanisms of gene regulation, so what turns genes on and off, and so that's similar to what we study in FSHD, so that research experience sort of started there. Then I got to work in a couple of other labs while I was an undergrad. And then once I graduated, I was looking for a job that would allow me to continue to study human disease in the lab, because I was kind of interested in therapy development, and that interested me more than, you know, studying maybe something more basic science related. And I found a job listing at the University of Washington in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
In Dan Miller's lab, and his lab is part of the Institute for Stem Cell and Regenerative Medicine at the UW. Mm. And we focus there on a couple of different diseases, and I ended up sort of being assigned to FSHD because of my interest in this gene regulation question. So I was really lucky to work there for 6 years and study FSHD in a variety of different ways and ask a variety of different questions, and sort of develop an expertise in FSHD. And then 3 years ago, the folks in San Diego who were sort of assembling the team at Genea BioCells contacted me and said, would you be interested in coming down and working on FSHD here? And so I moved down, and the purpose of my job here has been to try and develop systems that we can use to test drugs for FSHD and then sort of convince ourselves that we think those drugs are working in order to try to get something to the clinic as quickly as we can.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, working with Dan Miller, when you said you were there for, or Dr. Dan Miller, I should be more more official. I mean, he's earned that title.
he's a double doctor, too. He's a medical and a PhD, so doctor.
Wow. Did you ever do that to him? Did you ever tell him doctor? No.
I did not. I don't know if you'd appreciate that.
Oh, that'd be fine. Okay. All right. Well, you know. So you kind of jumped on then to the FSHD science of it, or what it was about. Was that the first time you ever heard of FSHD when you worked there?
It was, yeah. So the first time that I heard about it was when I interviewed in Dan's lab, and he sort of gave me a rundown of what the disease is generally, and sort of specifically what his lab wanted to study about it and what I'd be working on. And I think I was really lucky joining his lab also because he's an MD, PhD. He is a medical geneticist. He works at Seattle Children's and sees patients there, as well as running his research lab. So he's much busier than I am. And
wow.
He actually engages with a lot of patients. He brings patients into the lab and interacts with them on a regular basis. And so I got the opportunity to do that as well. Which is kind of rare for a scientist to be able to meet folks who are affected by the disease that you study. So that was also a big part of it, and also started my journey volunteering with the FSH Society and joining Friends of FSH Research because of his influence.
So do you think that because you got to meet some of the people, you know, you kind of put a face to it a little bit, was that kind of a catalyst maybe that it seems like, because you've kind of taken it beyond the lab, you know, when you're now volunteering for the FSH Society and for the Friends of FSH Research and these other platforms, that kind of, you know, that kind of takes the message beyond the lab. Do you think that the catalyst was because you got to meet the people that were affected by the disease in Dr. Miller's lab?
Yeah, I think that definitely influenced it. I mean, I've always been interested. One of the reasons I wanted to join a lab that studied human disease is that I've always cared a lot about people. You know, my mom used to say that I needed to be careful going into biology, that I didn't become a lab rat. That's the way she put it. And so this is my way of not becoming a lab rat and getting to interact with the people side of research, you know? And so I definitely think it's been a good opportunity for me. And also, I know that FSHD, especially in the beginning when we didn't understand quite as much about it, felt like a very complicated disease to understand. And so I thought, well, if I'm one of the people who understands it, I should take this opportunity to teach people about it whose lives might be most affected by it, you know?
So what is the most common question that you get from those that don't know what FSHD? Is it just simply, what the heck is that? Or, you know, and then how do you answer some of those basic questions in a way that an average Joe would understand?
Yeah, so it's sort of hard. It's hard to explain, but I've had a lot of practice at it now. So most people ask either what the symptoms are, which are fairly easy to explain, although you always have to say that they're variable between people. The severity is very different between people, and different muscles are sometimes affected between people. So that complicates it a little bit. And then a lot of people just ask me, what's it caused by? I think most people's reference for muscular dystrophy is something like Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, where it sort of makes sense in your mind. If you think of, there's a protein that's really important for muscle, and when that protein is mutated and it's not in the right shape anymore, that muscle doesn't work as well, right? So that makes sense in like a structural sense for people. Well, as FSHD is a little bit different, right? Where you start to explain like, oh, there's a gene that already, maybe you've lost people when you say there's a gene, right? But you say there's a gene that's expressed in muscle and it's not supposed to be. And so then that it's kind of a interesting question to answer for people, because I think you can see the wheels in their mind turning where they start to recognize that in order to understand that, you have to understand that all of the cells in your body have the same DNA, right? And the difference between the different cells is whether or not the different genes are expressed in them. So there are some parts of your DNA that are on and some parts are off. And a lot of people maybe went through beginning biology and knew that DNA makes RNA makes protein as a basic dogma, but don't really think about how that actually applies to making a whole person, right?
Mm-hmm.
With all the different cells
right.
in their body being different. And so I think explaining FSHD is kind of a primer in understanding the way that biology works.
Yeah, there's no doubt. When I was rattled off my diagnosis, you know, it's FSH, muscular dystrophy, and then rattles off the full what FSH means or whatever. And
sure.
I think, yeah, I don't know if my eyes went cross-eyed. You know, okay. You know, all I know
yeah,
is I can't
exactly.
do this, you know.
Right, yeah.
So
right, and in reality,
yeah.
it doesn't really matter that much for people to understand exactly what's
mm-hmm.
happening, except that except like in the context of their own lives, right? How does that affect me?
Right.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so what can't you do or can you do? And I think some people, like I'll explain it where, well, you know, I can't reach the top of my head to like, you know, comb my hair or to wash my hair as easily as maybe I could, or if I have to reach
sure.
over to get my seatbelt, put my arm across and those simple things. And they're just like, oh, okay. Like that's not a big deal. I'm like,
right.
ah,
that makes sense.
You know,
yeah.
it's like, no, I'm not trying to make it worse. You know, I'm not trying to go, no, it's really bad. I'm just trying to say,
right.
you know, that, you know, to these people, like, okay, you kind of take for granted some of those basic things. And then of course it escalates in other people where it's just, it's a lot, you know, worse and more to deal with. And,
yeah.
you know, so that's also hard to explain, you know, well, it can be different.
Yeah. And I would
that.
Also, yeah. And I would also say that that's been another aspect of meeting a lot of patients for me, is that I'm not a disabled person, right? And so just hanging out, like I encourage the interns in my lab to go and
mm-hmm.
just have dinner with an FSHD patient, right? And see what it's like for someone
right.
who's maybe severely affected to get into a restaurant and find a table and sit down mm-hmm. and eat their meal, right? If maybe they're having a hard time
right.
getting the food up to their mouth, or they're trying to use a straw or whatever else, right? The people around them aren't being considerate for whatever reason, like all these different things, to go out to their car and have someone having parked their car right next to them in the spot that should be available for wheelchair access, like all of these things, right? And so I think
right.
it's helpful. I find it helpful just like as a person to patients as well, so that I can learn about the struggles of other people, you know?
Yeah, that's well said. That's awesome that you do that. And it's not a discredit, you know, to those that necessarily don't. It's not like that they don't see the human side of it, but
it's
that
true,
you
yeah.
that you've taken that extra step, you know, to go, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to kind of meet and see what is this research, what is this hard work doing, you know, what am I working so hard for,
yeah.
or you know, who is this going to affect? Because you are kind of like, you know, we're all kind of trying to rally behind you. You know, maybe you know it, maybe you don't. Even some of us that don't even know who you are or that you even exist, perhaps, you know, but we know that there's a great scientific mind out there working on this. So we're all trying to rally behind you and, you know, go get them. You know, it's kind of like when I pushed my young child out, you know, to go play baseball, go ahead. We're all right behind you. You know, we're cheering,
right.
we're cheering you on.
Well, thank you. Yeah. No, I think it's good for patients also to meet someone who's spending
mm-hmm.
meet people, not just me, but anyone who's spending their time trying to find a treatment for the disease, right? I think that helps you think differently about the future, maybe, if you realize, because when I first started in FSHD, the gene that causes FSHD wasn't well described yet, and whenever they went to the doctor would just say, oh, we can't really help you, we don't have a lot of answers, there's no treatment, there's no even treatment on the horizon, you know, so I think it's also important to give people hope.
That kind of brings up an interesting segue. So you're already really good at this whole like radio thing. That's a good segue because what was it like, you know, when you first started this path, if you even back it all the way up to the University of Washington, and you know, to the work you're doing now with the you know, current Genua biocells, what is the difference between what was discovered then and where you're at now?
Well, so right after I joined the lab at the University of Washington, so that was almost 9 years ago, a paper came out called The Unifying Model for FSHD, essentially, that was trying to get researchers to come to a consensus on what we thought it was that caused FSHD. I say we, but I wasn't involved in that research because I wasn't there yet. And so that gives you kind of a perspective, right, where right before I joined, people in the field were finally starting to say, okay, we think this is the gene that probably causes the disease. We're still kind of trying to define exactly what that means. We don't know why this gene causes the disease in any way, but we think that this piece of DNA is associated with the patients who have FSHD, right? And so that was 9 years ago. And so I hear a lot from patients who are frustrated, like, oh, I wish, you know, I can't believe that we've been funding research for this long and we still don't have a treatment that's passed clinical trials and all of this stuff. But it's like, I mean, no, I haven't ever heard of another field where the gene was sort of definitively agreed upon in the field for causing a disease 9 years before you were potentially going into clinical trials, right? So it's actually really quickly. It meant that that a lot of people had to do a lot of work in the meantime. And so the first step was sort of making sure that we got the DNA sequence and all of the FSHD patients that we could to try and track down the gene. And then we ended up with a bunch of, I'm talking we as in the field, so not me specifically. We ended up with a bunch of patients who didn't fit the FSHD1 description. So then we had to go into, we actually in Dan's lab went into the DNA sequences of those folks who didn't fit the FSHD1 description. And in collaboration with a group in the Netherlands, we identified the gene that causes FSHD2, right? So now we could start to explain why were there these outliers whose genetics were a little bit different. And so once we could sort of try and start to explain all of the different patients and maybe how what their genetics look like, then we could start to say, okay, why do those genetics matter? Like, why did those gene changes result in a muscular dystrophy? And so a variety of different labs contributed to that, but it meant figuring out what was that gene actually doing, right? What was the protein that comes from that gene actually doing in muscle cells? Why did it matter that it was in muscle cells enough to kill them, right? And then how do we develop models of the disease in a dish that allow us to test drugs? So that was the next step. How can we actually measure the FSHD changes in cells in a petri dish that will allow us to put drugs on that petri dish and to figure out if they're actually doing anything interesting. And then eventually that led to my work at Genea, where we're able to try and identify drugs that we think are making FSHD cells look healthier.
Yeah, describe
so
a little
a,
bit
quite
of
a
that
process.
Work. Yeah, I mean, that's and I'm sure you really kind of scaled it down a great deal so we could understand it at our level. Our meaning mine and, you know, high school, a little bit of college level here. Tell us a little bit then of what that work is like that Genea does. I know we say it's biocells and you're working, it sounds like, with some stem cell type research. So how do those things kind of play into helping figure out how to treat this FSHD?
Sure. So at Genea, our focus is using what are called pluripotent stem cells. So these are the very early stem cells of the body that are able to turn into any of the cell types that we have. So they could turn into eye cells or skin cells or muscle cells, whatever it is that they need to be. And so before I joined Genea, the group that was originally in Sydney, Australia, they developed a method for taking those pluripotent stem cells grown in a dish and turning them into muscle cells. So that means that they, in all the ways that we can measure them, they look like muscle cells. And so that gave us a chance. So one of the options to study FSHD is to take a muscle biopsy from a patient and plate those cells down on a dish and study them. But we at Genea knew that, you know, you can only ask a patient to do that so many times until they start saying no.
And
we were sort of limited in our capacity to to gather those cells, right? And so we thought we could use this system for turning stem cells into muscle cells. We could do that as many times as we wanted to because we have a bank of these stem cells and they grow forever. And so we could then have an unlimited supply of muscle cells in order to run drug screens, which is important, right? You want to test as many drugs as you can. And
right.
So we were lucky that our mother company in Australia is a fertility company. And so they had patients who would come in with FSHD in their families. One of the parents was affected by FSHD who were going through in vitro fertilization and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which means that you make a couple of embryos in the lab and you test those embryos to see if any of them have the genetic disease, and you implant the ones that don't if you don't want to have that disease in your children, right? And so that means that as part of that process, there are excess embryos. And so patients can choose to destroy those embryos. They can choose to pay to freeze them and save them forever to see if maybe they want to have another kid. Or they can choose to donate them to research and have embryonic stem cell lines generated from them. And so we were lucky enough to have a couple of different FSHD families who had excess embryos and were generous enough to donate them. And so we could make stem cell lines in the lab from those FSHD-affected embryos, which meant that now we have FSHD-affected pluripotent stem cells, right? And then we developed that method to make muscle, so now we have an unlimited source of FSHD-affected muscle to screen on.
Wow.
Does that make
unlimited
sense?
Amount. Yeah, it does. Yeah, because you're right. If I think you got me with the muscle biopsy thing, because that would not be great to have to go to the people, go to that well, you know, constantly and say, we need more muscle from you, you know.
Right.
So the fact that you can. So then is it you're basically generating it off of these some of these donated cells from these people? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so we can you can make stem cell lines from the excess embryos, and then we can grow up a whole bunch of those stem cells and freeze them down. And so we just have a bank of these stem cells, and we can always go back and thaw another vial of them and grow them up in the lab. And then we have a system that we use to turn them into muscle cells, which just involves essentially changing their food with a couple of different, or with a variety of different growth factors and stuff in it. So we can coax the stem cells to turn into muscle cells.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing that you can do that.
Cool.
Yeah, you quite simply put it that way. That's pretty cool. I mean, for me, that's pretty wild. So to kind of, I also wanted to ask, because there was, you know, back in May of this, you know, of 2018, there was an article written on the FSH Society. They were talking about the orphan drug designated by the FDA. For, you know, a therapeutic candidate. It was what the name of it is. They just put some letters and numbers with it. GBC905.
Yeah, exactly. So GBC just stands for Genea Biocell.
Oh, fine. Okay. I get
just
it.
So you
okay.
can remember it more easily.
So tell us a little about that treatment for FSHD, because it sounds very promising.
Yeah, sure. So what we did is we have a medicinal chemist who works on our staff. He's our VP of drug discovery named Alex Kisilyov. And he put together a drug library for us, which just means that he selected a wide variety of different drugs that hit a wide variety of different pathways and targets and cells. And our approach at Genea has been to test repurposed drugs. So that means that we are, in our drug library that Alex assembled for us, we are looking at drugs that have either previously been tested in animals, usually mice, or they've gone through phase 1 or phase 2 clinical trials in humans. And so we did that because we wanted to sort of stack the deck in order to try and speed up the drug development process for the next steps if we found something that we thought was promising. Because a lot of times you'll find something that you think is really working well in the dish, and then all of a sudden when you bring it into an animal model, it's toxic, or you it's hitting a different target than you thought that it was, right? So we wanted to have sort of as much information as we could about the drugs before we started.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it was my job to design the system that we use to try and test the drugs. And so essentially what that means is taking those FSHD-affected muscle cells that we made out of the stem cells
mm-hmm.
and putting them into dishes that have many, many, many wells inside of them, and then putting a drug into each one of those wells and measuring whether or not we saw expression of the gene that causes FSHD called DUX4.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could go into each of those wells and essentially count how many DUX4 positive cells there were. And so we were looking mm-hmm. for drugs, obviously, where you saw very few or you didn't see any DUX4 positive cells. And so those are
right.
the drugs that we would call hits.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we came up with a list of those hits, and we ran them through a variety of different experiments to confirm to ourselves and also for the FDA to prove to the FDA that we thought that the drug was doing what we wanted it to do in the FSHD cells. And
mm-hmm.
so I don't know how much more into that you want to go, but there are a variety of effects of DUX4 expression that you can measure in FSHD cells, right? It's killing the cells for one, so you can measure whether or not the cells
right.
die, but there are other things that you can measure as well. So we essentially just set up a whole panel of different things we thought we could measure in the cells. And so we ran the drugs through that whole panel, and we our favorite, so we have a variety of backup compounds as well, but our favorite was this 905 mm-hmm. compound. And so then
mm-hmm.
we applied to the FDA, and we said, hey, we think we have, well, so actually the next step was to test that compound in patient biopsy samples. So now we just had one drug that we wanted to run, right? So we didn't need an unlimited supply of muscle cells, and we wanted to go back and just confirm that if we took cells out of a adult patient, could we stop DUX4 from being expressed there as well. And so we did that in a couple of different cell lines, both FSHD1 and FSHD2 affected, just to see if the drug might be useful for both types of FSHD. And so
mm-hmm.
across the board, whether we looked in our muscle cells from stem cells or whether we looked in the muscle cells from patients, we could see that the compound worked really pretty well to knock down
wow.
DUX4 expression at pretty low concentration.
So once you have something that can knock down this DUX4, or what we all hope, right, is stop it from doing what it's doing.
Yeah.
Is that also, I mean, then is there going to be a way to, for those that have lost muscle, if you stop the DUX4, it kind of what freezes us of where we are. Do you think that there's going to be anything then that can get to the point where muscle can be regenerated back?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the answer yet, right? It depends on, we'll see what happens when we go through clinical trials, but I have a guess. So I think that one thing to keep in mind is that muscle, the job of muscle in some ways, besides just moving your body, is to regenerate. There
mm-hmm.
are endogenous, we would say endogenous, so inherent muscle stem cells that live inside the
mm-hmm.
muscle. Then their job specifically is to repopulate muscle. And if you work out, for instance, or you run really far,
mm-hmm.
you'll damage the muscle and then rebuild it, which is mm-hmm. how you get bigger muscles if you're lifting weights, for instance. You
mm-hmm.
keep adding
right.
more and more muscle from those stem cells. And so that's one promising thing about a therapy for FSHD is if you can stop DUX4 from being expressed, presumably those stem cells would be able to better do their job and to better repopulate the muscle with healthy muscle cells. I think
wow.
the other thing to keep in mind is that there are therapies being tested right now that don't target DUX4, but instead just make muscle cells bigger. And so it's possible, for instance, that you would want a DUX4 targeting therapy like what we hope 905 will do, and you maybe pair that with another therapy that will help you grow muscle a little bit better.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? So, and
yeah.
our therapy
yeah,
will stop that muscle from expressing DUX4. So we would hope, right? So it kind of,
it
depends also on the state of the patient, I think. It's hard
mm-hmm.
to imagine, for instance, if a muscle is completely converted to fat, like you see in some really severely affected muscles, it's hard to imagine that you're going to be able to rebuild a perfect muscle there, right?
Right.
It's difficult
right.
for your body to do that. But I guess we'll see.
Wow. So it's almost like two therapies could kind of work hand in hand, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's possible.
Wow. So what is the next step for this, what you called your favorite, the 905, now that the FDA has done this orphan drug thing? Yeah.
Yeah, so the orphan drug designation is, so orphan in this case means that the disease that you're trying to treat is rare. And so the America's Congress recognized with the Orphan Drug Act that you need to incentivize pharmaceutical companies to make treatments for rare diseases, because you're going to make a lot more money generally off of, you know, like a cancer treatment than you are off of a treatment for a rare disease. And so the purpose of orphan drug designation is to give tax incentives and make it a little bit easier to develop drugs for orphan diseases, and also gives market exclusivity. So it says, like, we have this specific drug and no one else is allowed to release, you know, a generic version of it for however many years. So it's more of, so we had to demonstrate that we had data that we thought was convincing to the FDA. So it, there is a scientific part of it, but the approval itself, I just want to clarify, because people have been like asking me about it being FDA approved. And so it's not FDA approved to move into the clinic, right? That's orphan drug designation was just the first step to try and make the development of the drug a little bit easier. So our next step is to apply to the FDA for what's called investigational new drug status, IND is what we usually say. And so that is saying we have all of this data, we've run this drug through a variety of animal models, and we think that it's safe, and we think that it works in shutting down DUX4, and we think that it's worthwhile to take it into the first phase of safety trials in people. And those safety trials in phase one are typically run in healthy volunteers. So you're just checking to see how well did people tolerate the drug, right? And so we actually, this drug, because it's repurposed, like I mentioned, it's actually gone through phase one clinical trials before at a higher concentration than what we think we would need in FSHD, just based on the data that we have so far. So we feel pretty confident about that phase one trial that we wouldn't expect to see any issues with the drug there. But so just sorry to answer your question, the next step is to apply to to the FDA for investigational new drug status to say, is it okay if we move on into the next stage in phase one clinical trial?
Wow. And how, and what is this is, you know, probably right now a lot of people that are listening, they're saying, okay, this is awesome, but what's the timeline? You know, what do you, if this drug keeps going the way you want it to go and the research is going in the positive direction, do you feel then, you know, what would be that timeline for, you know, say the C word, a cure, or in this case, you know, a solid treatment?
Yeah. So like I said, the first step is to take it into phase one studies for safety. And so if everything goes well, so we're in the process now of raising capital in order to try and support the clinical studies and the preclinical studies that we have to do. And so it sort of depends on how that pans out and how much time that takes and how our application with the FDA goes, right? So they might come back to us and say, we need you to do these additional studies before we'll let you move forward, for instance. And so it's hard to answer that question, but our goal initially, which is still our goal, is to be in those phase one safety studies at the end of 2019 or beginning of 2020. So then after we see, if we see that the drug is safe and we don't see any adverse effects from it, then the next step would be to go into phase two efficacy studies, which is where you actually go into patients and you measure to see if the drug has any positive effect on their disease. And so I can't predict for you exactly when that would happen, but it sort of depends on what happens in the first phase and in our application before that.
So the other, you know, key words that you're saying, you're, the whole stem cell, right? And I know for some people that can even think of a little bit of controversy, you know, you're using stem cells.
Sure. Yeah.
And I know that I saw in some of my research that you did a little bit of a talk, I think it was actually for an FSH Society event, I want to say in California, and you talked about the Proposition 71 that had to do with stem cells. Can you talk a little bit about that now, about the importance of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So what happened was the federal government outlawed use of federal funds for science that involves embryonic stem cell research. So I told you already about how embryonic stem cell lines are made, right? They're made from discarded embryos. Mm-hmm. And so that you know, for some people creates some controversy. They think that maybe instead of, I don't know what they think exactly, to be honest, but they think that instead of using the embryos for scientific research, that they should just be discarded, or they think maybe that people shouldn't go through IVF. I don't know what the answer is. Well, you'll have to have a different guest for that one, but overall, you know, there's a misunderstanding about where those lines come from. So for us, they come from embryos that were already generated for this process that just weren't used for it, for IVF, right? And so the federal government outlawed the use of federal funds to fund this type of research, any type of research involving embryonic stem cells. So that's the type of research that we do, where you make embryonic stem cells into something else to study in a lab. That's the use of embryonic stem cells for treatment. Pretty much, yeah, any type of research, even just culturing the stem cells in the lab to learn more about stem cells, all that stuff cannot be funded by the federal government, like the NIH or the National Science Foundation. And so California recognized that that decision could have a pretty significant effect on our ability to generate stem cell-based therapies, and also our ability to do things like what we're doing at Genea, where we run drug screens using stem cells as our cell source. And so they decided to build an amendment into the institution in order to guarantee the safety of embryonic stem cell research in California, and also guaranteed using, with the amendment that you mentioned, guaranteed funding for a certain amount of time for embryonic stem cell research, and also training for folks in California, for scientists, to teach people how to use the cells and to try and give grants to support the type of research that we do and that many, many other labs do in California. And so that's had a positive, like literally had a positive impact on my life in a variety of ways. One is that that's one of the reasons that Genea chose to move the BioCells group from Sydney to San Diego. And so if the proposition hadn't passed, I would never have moved to San Diego, because BioCells wouldn't be here, right? Because this is a permissive environment for embryonic stem cell research and a good place to do any kind of biotech research because of the hubs that are here. That's one thing. The other thing that the proposition did was funded a variety of different sort of scholarships or internship programs for folks who are interested in going into science. And so at Genea, we've hosted a couple of different interns from the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, which is what the institute that came out of that proposition is called. And so we call it CIRM, and CIRM actually funds the salary of these students, and they come to our lab and we teach them how to do embryonic stem cell research. And
got it.
I'm not going into the full gambit of everything that CIRM does, but just as two examples in my life and the way that it's affected stem cell research that I've done. It's been really impactful to both the economy of California, but certainly scientific research here.
Now, is this back on the ballot again, this proposition?
Yeah, there will be another proposition coming up, because the funding essentially, you know, it's a finite amount of funding from the original one. There will be another proposition. As far as I know, they haven't announced exactly when it will go on the ballot. The original timeline was 2020, and I don't know with 100% certainty if they've announced the exact date.
Okay. So in your mind, obviously, this is very important that it, and I think in all of ours that are listening, that this passes yet again, whenever it is, if it's 2020 or later. This seems like it's kind of a tipping point if it doesn't get passed. Am I being overdramatic with that, or am I kind of lining up
it means
how
that
crucial
a
it
lot
is?
Of scientific, yeah, it means that a lot of scientific programs that have developed so far and shown a lot of promise would lose a lot of funding, and many of them probably wouldn't be able to continue, right? So it's definitely very important to to Californians and especially to researchers here, and also to patients everywhere, right? California is a safe haven sort of for stem cell research and stem cell funding. And so if you are living in a state that's not so permissive, you're sort of counting on the research that's going on here in order to be able to hopefully benefit from these things in the future.
Now, before we let you go, I also wanted to ask you, too, about your work with the Friends of FSH Research. And, you know, obviously you're volunteering with FSH Society, which is partly why you're here talking with us, too. But talk, if you can, a little bit about, you know, the Friends of FSH Research and what their part is in this and how you're helping them.
Yeah, so I sit on the nonprofit management board for Friends, and then I also sit on the scientific advisory board. So the group is based in Seattle, started by Rick and Terry Colella, whose son has FSHD. And they began the organization sort of with the feeling that there just needed to be more attention and more funding toward FSHD research, which I think everybody can agree on. and they began a very successful fundraiser, which now raises hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, and also assembled a scientific advisory board of different field experts, essentially, in order to make decisions about the type of grants that we would fund at Friends. And their purpose, which they've done really well, it was to attract people initially in the Seattle area, but now sort of all over the world, attract people to FSHD research and to try and get scientists on board who they thought could be real leaders in the field and could make a huge difference for patients. So the idea has always been to try and fund a cure. And their focus has really been, initially was really on funding basic science research. So like, can we figure out the gene that causes FSHD? Can we figure out what that gene is doing in muscle cells? And so they were really successful in doing that initially. And then now continue to accept grant applications from folks all over the world with always the focus of finding a treatment or a cure. So especially funding things that may yield eventual treatments, even if it's a very early stage research project that has a potential therapeutic, you know, endpoint, but also funding things like animal models and supporting the Clinical Trials Research Network and sort of taking any steps we think might be useful toward toward treatment. So it's been really interesting for me to be able to be involved with that group and do fundraising and try and also do some science communication to explain to the public like what it is exactly that our grant funded and what was the result of the science that their money went toward. And so, so it's been a great opportunity.
Yeah. Sounds like you're the perfect advocate for that. You're, like I said earlier in our conversation, how you seem to be bridging that gap very well between being the scientist, but also the advocate and the person explaining, hey, this is where your money that you're donating is going. And it sounds like you can honestly say, hey, I'm one of the people using some of that money perhaps, or, you know, helping this funding go the right direction so we can get proper research and proper treatment. So I think that's awesome. I love the fact that you kind of do all these different things, even though it makes you a very busy person, as we said. But I can honestly say I appreciate all that work.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah, it's been an honor for me to be able to be involved in so many sort of different ways and to meet a lot of the people that hopefully their research will eventually impact.
Well, thanks, Amanda, for joining us tonight. Man, you've given us a ton of information, and I'm glad that this is available for on-demand listening. I think some are going to have to listen to it again. There's so much information that you brought to the table tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me to be on, and folks are welcome to check out our website or send us an email at Janae if they have additional questions or they want to chat about any of the things that we talked about today.
What's the website that they can poke around and take a look?
That's JaneaBioCells.com.
Perfect. And that's G-E-N-E-A, if those need to know how that's spelled, and Google that a little bit. And yeah, absolutely. I did a lot of poking around, but honestly, for the sense of making sure I knew a little bit what I was talking about here today, to ask you some hopefully halfway decent questions, but it
Absolutely.
Was fascinating to see what the work is being done there. So thanks again, Amanda.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we had Amanda Rickardon. Amazing. Amazing. So we've had always really great guests that brought a lot to the table. Amanda did not disappoint. Spoke in a plain way for people such as myself that I can understand what she's talking about and kind of make it all register and make sense. And the fact that she's doing so many other things to kind of, like I said, bridge the gap is awesome. If you want to check out some things, like I said, she has geneabiocells.com. That's G-E-N-E-A, biocells.com. If you want to check out the Friends of FSH Research, that's fshfriends.org. She's a part of that scientific board as well. I also wanted to touch base as we start to close down and close up shop for this episode. The next episode, which will be December 26th, we'll have a kind of a year in review. I think we're planning on having June Kinoshita on a little bit to talk a little bit. We got some notes from Beth Johnston, especially about what's going on with all these great chapter groups that are being formed. I'm happy to say I've become a Milwaukee area chapter group director. I haven't done a lot yet. I'm starting to generate some buzz, I hope, with that. And we can do a little meet and greet coming up in January after the holiday season's over. But I also kind of wanted to include you all in what's going on in the FSH Society as before we say goodnight. December 1st, there's the LA Connections chapter meeting and holiday party, so I hope you all can be a part of that. December 1st, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., Santa Monica College, Bundy Campus, Los Angeles, California. December 2nd, San Diego member meeting, so maybe Amanda, that's in her neck of the woods. Torrey Pines Science Park. Wow, that sounds nice. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also on December 2nd, FSHD Bay Area Chapter Support Group meeting. Stanford Hospital, Hoover Pavilion in Palo Alto, California, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. December 6th, the FSHD Connections or Connecticut Connections is meeting. As you all know, that's virtual. That's Thursday, December 6th, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. December 7th, Colorado Holiday Special, the Rock Bottom Brewery, Willow Creek Room. They will be having a nice little get-together there from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And finally, on December 9th, Atlanta Chapter Holiday Social event as well at the Vintage Pizzeria Dunwoody location in Dunwoody, Georgia. That's 5 p.m. to 7:30 on December 9th. And then, of course, in December, right after Christmas, we'll have the next FSH Society radio show. I'm excited to have a little bit of a year in review. Hopefully we can do a little bit of some past show clips and share some stories of the great guests we've had on. It's going to be tough for me to choose, you know, to go through all some of those past shows and kind of go back down memory lane a little bit of what 2018 brought us. And as we look forward to 2019, as we push hard for a cure as a unified group, as all these chapter groups are joining forces as we speak. So thank you all for joining us. Thanks for being here. Thank you to Amanda Rickard for joining us as well. Check out those websites, as I previously mentioned. Check out all the great work that she's doing. If you want to email me directly now after the show, that's no problem, fshradiohost@gmail.com. You can text me or call me at 414-659-3392. Follow the show on Twitter at FSH Society and fshsociety.org. Thanks all for being here. You've been listening to the FSH Society Radio Show. Good night.